Welcome to another fantastic episode of Couch Potato Theater here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Couch Potato Theater is the podcast where we discuss fan favorites, hidden gems, and cult classics throughout cinema history. And that, my friends, is the definition of what our show is all about. I'm Davis Grayson, your host of Couch Potato Theater. And today, this is a very special podcast because I'm looking for a madman in a blue box. And so, if you don't know what that is, today we're going to be talking about the 1996 Doctor Who movie. And of course, I have to have a special guest host because I cannot go on this adventure alone. So today joining me is none other than Christian Basil of Mark Who 42. Christian, how are you today?
Not bad, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you for the introduction. And when people say you're looking for a madman in a blue box, what I was about to say, whatever you do in Los Angeles stays in Los Angeles. we'll just leave it at that. But yeah, we understand what's going on over there. Hi, guys. Yep, this is Christian Basil. How you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. So thank you actually for joining us today because it's a real treat to actually have you on board today.
Thank you. It's a treat to be on board, man. Couch Potato Theater. Yep.
So before we move on, let's tell our listeners where we can actually contact us. So if you are subscribing to us on iTunes, hit the subscribe button for the Phantom Podcast Network. We're also on Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. We also have a Facebook page, which is the Phantom Podcast Network. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at FanPodNetwork. And you could find me on Twitter at Davis Grayson. And Christian, where can we find you on social media?
That's great. I don't know. They haven't heard the episode yet, so they might hear it and go, I don't want his contact. I'm not going to reach out to this guy. What do I want to talk to him? He scares me, Mom. I am a co-host and co-producer of the iHeart radio show, Mark Who 42. Our base website is markwho42.net. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. And you can find us on iHeart, iTunes, anywhere you could probably Google Mark Who 42, you'll find us somewhere. And you can download the MP3 off of our website as well. I also do a little ditty thing on the side that I started 5 years ago, as much as I started Mark Who 42 5 years ago. The Legend of the Traveling TARDIS, which is now up to 30,000 likes. Yeah, go figure. A little blue box. Speaking of a little blue box in Los Angeles, well, more like Florida, but he's got a big fandom site, and I know you've been part of the mythos now. Part of the legend.
I believe so. Yes. Who has been your most unique picture with the Legend of the Traveling TARDIS?
Oh, God. I'm going to be a lot of the. As much as there's been tons of celebrities who've been with him, I mean, we have four of the doctors. We got Paul McGann and Colin Baker, but I can't. There's so many cosplayers out there who have interacted with the Traveling TARDIS. And when we first started, it was kind of like, well, you know, the people were posing with this blue box, but now cosplayers have kind of turned it into a story. One of my favorite ones, and I'm trying not to, you know, it's like saying who's your favorite of the billion children that you have out there. It's just, one of them is going to go, hey, daddy, what about me? Not your favorite anymore. Recently, there's one with Amelia Poole, who is better known as Holly Quinn Cosplay and Arts. Mm. And she was at a convention, I think it was Hero Hype. And there happened to be – she was dressed up as the comic book Harley, and there was a girl who was dressed up as Suicide Squad Harley. And there's a picture of the two of them together. Basically, one is jumping on the other's back while they're grabbing the Traveling TARDIS. It's almost like a Harley fight. Nice. And it's one of my favorites. I mean, there's tons and tons of favorites, but the one that pops up is that one, because that one was just something I wasn't even expecting. And that one, those are the kinds of pictures that I enjoy when people or cosplayers or celebrities or just, you know, just people who just want to take it and tell their story. In fact, just recently, I used to say, okay, here you go, you know, pose with it, you know, do your best, you know, smile and everything like that. But the ones that people are more excited with are the ones that they see something interactive, a story going on. Also, a friend of mine, she dressed up like Flo from Progressive, and her husband dressed up like Jake from State Farm, and they were fighting over the traveling TARDIS. Things like that.
That's awesome.
You know, things like that, where it just takes it to another level, where the TARDIS becomes a story now, as just opposed to here pose with it. They really have a great time with it.
Oh, that's awesome. I know I've seen, I think, the video with Peter Griffin and, you know, other
yeah.
cosplay celebrities. As
which I had everything. To watch after the Peter Griffith cosplay. I never thought I'd have to do that, but yeah. I felt dirty. It's my TARDIS. So.
Completely understand. So, well, today we're going to talk about the 1996 Doctor Who movie. So, what did you think about first reaction?
When I grew up, because I grew up classic PBS Who. Mm-hmm. And to see it leave the air after 26 years, Sylvester was the last one, you know, you were a kid and you were hoping, okay, well, maybe it's just taken a year or two off, about maybe like, you know, double digits, you know, from 89 all the way up to 1996. So, you know, 15 years. Yeah. Okay. We'll take a break. and here's the funny thing about it. I was up in the middle of the night watching Fox. And I knew nothing about it at all. And then I was recording something. I was like 2 or 3 in the morning. I was recording something. And lo and behold, for a good 2 seconds, was a Doctor Who commercial.
Huh.
And I like, did I just imagine this? Did I dream it? And I rewound the VHS tape. And guys, if you don't know what a VHS tape, please Google it. Or this will be about an hour long radio show. VHS tape. I wound it, and there it was. And it was just a picture of Paul McGann putting his hand through the glass. And then you see the words Doctor Who, and it's the TARDIS spiraling down from the Trial of the Time Lord series, which they use for the promo, where you see the TARDIS spiraling down into the courtroom type area. And I was like, what the hell? Why am I seeing all this on Fox? And then I kept watching, and then the commercial became a little bit more and more and more, and I was like, oh, this is real. And they're filming it in Vancouver. And they look like they have a budget of more than $5 at a college, you know, college program somewhere. You know, they look like they've actually spent money on this. So I was really, really excited. So I watched the episode, and they say, oh, yeah, and the master is going to be Eric Roberts. And my jaw hit the floor. I'm like, what? I guess we ran out of British actors in Vancouver all of a sudden. Okay, fine. I'll live with it. I enjoyed it. I would have kept watching it. I think there were some things that were a little bit risque of what they were doing, and some things I think they were trying to reinvent so that the TV audience would appreciate, but making him half human was something that was like, whoa, this is Gallifreyan. Why is he Spock now? And the kiss that was heard around the world, which didn't affect me too much, but it was like, no, the Doctor doesn't kiss his companions. Come on, what's this all about? Why are we, you know? So, but I was still watched it, and I was excited. I mean, you could have put Mr. Potato Head as Doctor Who, and I would have watched the damn thing, and that's. You know, that's how a diehard fan that I am. But I sincerely enjoyed it not only being come back, not only having a budget that made to actually make real the imagination that the writer was composing to the demand of the TARDIS. And when he flips the switch and the TARDIS ceiling just exposes into this, you know, this universal projection screen, I'm just like, wow. This is finally the budget and the acting and the type of thing that Doctor Who's been crying for that they couldn't have when they were at the BBC.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, I remember seeing the previews because I think it was 1996. Fox was doing a plethora of like a movie of the week.
Yeah.
A TV movie of the week. I think they also had, what's it, Generation X? The new school of X-Men.
I might have, but I was too worried about Doctor Who to care about any other of the TV of the movie of the week.
And there was quite a bit more, and I saw it. However, as you know as well as I do, there was no DVR back then, so right. I saw the previews for it. However, I didn't get to see it until much later on, so I didn't really actually know what had happened. And because I know it was supposed to be, supposedly it was supposed to be a backdoor pilot to do
yes.
an American-produced Doctor Who. Now, do you think that would have been a good pilot to actually start and have Paul McGann do like three or four series with that?
There were two things that were going against it There were two things that were going against it mm-hmm. that I think, and maybe in retrospect I could understand, but didn't. First of all, don't ever put up any episode that you're trying to start up against the series finale of Roseanne. Which I think is what killed it, because everybody's running to Roseanne. Although, by the way, if you're not interested in Roseanne, here's a sci-fi show. I'm like, no, everybody's interested in Roseanne. They want to see how it ends.
Yeah.
It's been there for a while. It's most beloved. You know, here it is. It's the 90s. You know, they want to see how it all ends. So everybody ran to there. And the second one is what I agree with what Russell T. Davies did. Was that we didn't get a regeneration scene. We started off with the Doctor, and I thought, okay, this is interesting. We just start the Doctor off. We don't get a regeneration. Having said that, what appeased to me in the TV movie Enemy Within, when he changes, I'm sure people were getting, you know, scratching their heads for people who were going into the series and like, what the hell is this? And all of a sudden, the person who's supposedly the hero and the protagonist changes right there within the first 10 minutes of the episode, first 10 or 20 minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
And then you have to like this new guy. So maybe what they should have done is start with Paul McGann in an episode that kind of brings people into Doctor Who, as opposed to a regeneration scene, because now it's part of it. And later on, maybe we should have seen Night of the Doctor. Or I'm sorry, not Night of the Doctor, but we should have seen a regeneration going from Sylvester to Paul to explain it, so that we could have appeased, you know, that would have kept me in my seat going, okay, will we get our regeneration scene? And then later on, when the new audiences are comfortable with Doctor Who, now they can understand what the first 26 years is all about. We get a regeneration scene maybe in episode 5 or 6 or the season finale.
So. I agree with you on that, because Sylvester McCoy, when you first see that first, you know, 10, 15 minutes of that movie, mm-hmm. you're like, that's not really a good send-off for him. That's not really like a final story for him. I mean, to have what happened to him, you're like, really? That's how it goes out?
Yeah, I back then I didn't appreciate that, because I was always a purist and thinking the Doctor needed to sacrifice. Every regeneration needed to have a sacrifice and a big ending, and you know he's either saving one person or a galaxy, or he's falling off a tower to make sure the universe stays intact, things like that. But I'm thinking, if he's lived long enough, at some point, and this is kind of the joke that the 10th Doctor says in the next Doctor episode, what if I just trip over a rock, you know, and it happens? So I would think that somewhere, maybe along the way, it may not be this heroic glorified thing, but what if one regeneration, he just doesn't get that? If you live long enough, you probably will end up doing that.
That's true. I mean, and he just literally got caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, exactly. Which is kind of neat. I mean, he's lived all of his life and he knows he's coming to the end pretty much. And it depends upon the mythos. And I'm sorry if I'm going steeped into this, but Lungborough, which was one of the Virgin novels that kind of led into this finale, depending upon whether you think it's canon or not. And I'm sorry for the new people. The mythos of Doctor Who stretches beyond just TV show, stretches into audio and to books. And it actually has so many different dimensions and so many things that it's hard to keep up. Even with a whoing like me, I'm like, is that part of the series? Is that not part of the series? But yeah, I didn't think he had a great send off. Botched surgery what a way to go. And then, but if you think before that, for a while, the Sixth Doctor supposedly hit his head against the console during a war fight with laser beams to become Sylvester McCoy. So the last two didn't seem to have a glorious ending.
That's true. That's true.
At that time, so,
but didn't, if I remember correctly, with the Sixth Doctor, wasn't there a story that was released by Big Finish, who actually made that story, retconned it or whatever?
It kind of made it make a little more sense, which I kind of didn't think it did. But if this was going to be the ending, I think this was a perfect way for Six to go. And the Big Finish audio is called The Last Adventure. And it's the final battle between the Valyard and the Sixth Doctor, for what we know. Notice I said Sixth Doctor. I didn't say the final the battle between the Doctor and the Valyard.
Yes.
But it was a beautiful send-off. It dealt with multi-companions on the episode. And it was just, I think, a bittersweet end for Sixth to go. If he was going to go, if we were going to give him the heroic reason and the reasoning why he hit his head or whatever you want to believe happened to the Sixth Doctor, he gets a wonderful send off as opposed to, oh, OK, that just happened. And he's on the floor and he's wrapped up in a Sylvester McCoy burrito in what used to be the Sixth Doctor suit. So, yeah, everything's fine.
Of course. So let's talk about these Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann. What mm-hmm. was your first thoughts about seeing him?
I thought he was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I thought he encompassed something of the Doctor that he paid homage to his predecessors, but still, he was his own Doctor. He enjoyed the zest for life more than his seven predecessors. He enjoyed things. I could see this Doctor going and watching a fireworks show at Disney and just sitting down watching from beginning to end, or just, you know, watching a star go out. He's the Doctor, I think, for a better term, and pardon the pun, kind of the romantic Doctor, where he sees beauty in everything. Which is kind of ironic later on that he becomes, you know, later on the War Doctor. The next Doctor after him is the War Doctor because he's tired of everything that's happened. He doesn't see the beauty in it anymore, and he doesn't see himself being the Doctor. But I think Paul did an excellent job. I would have loved to seen him more. Luckily, Big Finish hooked onto him and gave him tons and tons of series and companions and different little spinoffs from his Doctor that kind of fleshed him out. I would love to see him back on TV just to get, you know, two or three seasons so that way he can have a series, but it's up to him and the BBC what they want to do.
Oh, absolutely. Because I know, I think this was one of the first times we met is what Coliseum of Comics. They had a Facebook posting and said, what would you do if we told you the Eighth Doctor would be at our shop?
Right.
And I was like, well, I'll actually go there. And I went there and I was like, he was my very first Doctor I met. And I'm not going to lie. I don't think the man has aged whatsoever. He has aged extremely well.
No, we joke around that he found a way to the secret of life and he bathes in the blood of virgins and politicians. I mean, he will be 300 years old. He could probably still play the Doctor as the Doctor and still never – yeah, he never ages. He looks exactly the same. And I'm just like, my God, how do you do that? And there's – I joked that there was people in Hollywood that get together. If you remember the movie Being John Malkovich – mm-hmm. Do you remember the tail ending? I think he's part of that group. I will be dead and buried, and Paul McGann will be 300 years old, and he'll be doing, you know, another YouTube video with it. Oh, you know, he'll be doing his 1,000th Big Finish episode or something like that. And every of the new Doctor series, Eccleston and Smith and Capaldi, they'll be underground with me, and McGann will be going, okay, it's another episode I can do, huh?
Because I remember meeting him, and mm-hmm. I asked him, because he's a super nice guy, in case anyone has never met him. He is he's just a really down-to-earth gentleman. And I asked him, I said, you have not aged. I was like, how do you do it? He goes, good genes and a little red wine.
I believe him. I believe him.
And I thought it was good because I asked him, Because I think we had talked about it briefly before I met him, and I asked him, I said, so how hard was it to step back into the role of the Eighth Doctor since it's been so many years? And he said, actually, it was pretty easy since I was doing it on Big Finish. And I was like, oh, somebody was just mentioning Big Finish. I need to check this out. And I started with the very first episode, and I think that was Storm Warning, where he introduced Charlie. And Big Finish soon after had like a $2.99 downloads, and so I started downloading as many as I could, and it was just really good stories. I mean, and it's professionally done, and it's just really, really wonderful stories of the Eighth Doctor.
And he's had many adventures with a companion named Lucy Miller. They actually, and I haven't heard this series yet, and I'm so dying to do it. And we sell Big Finish, which I think is funny, but it's like, haven't you heard? We sell Big Finish at the conventions for Mark Who 42. Mm-hmm. And somebody came up to me and said, haven't you heard all the episodes yet? And I said, I don't think you understand. There are more episodes of Big Finish Doctor Who than there is of Doctor Who. And true. To listen to this all, I would have to mortgage my house twice through maybe three times over to hear all this, and it's nonstop. I think they recently to Nick Briggs, he signed a contract a couple years ago that they were going to run for another 20-30 odd years or something like that.
I mean
if you're doing great, you know you can't be running a contract with the BBC saying, hey, we got license for another decades of episodes. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm like, you're on. Yeah, okay. And yeah, and I got to say something about Paul too, about his personality. If you've never met Paul McGann, I'm not dissing anybody of celebrity nature or, you know, or any of the doctors who I've met, but Paul is so wonderful to the fans. And like I said, I'm not bashing anybody else, but if somebody pointed out and say, Christian, of all the people you've met, who do you think is the best? I hate to point out one, but Paul, I have to give it to Paul, because going back to the Traveling TARDIS, there was a convention in SuperCon in South Florida that Paul McGann and Eric Roberts were there. And I told Paul, and Paul was, we had an issue. Because he kept sending the bottom of my TARDIS, but unfortunately the ink kept evaporating for one reason or another. And then what I wanted to do with the Traveling TARDIS is the bottom of it comes off, and I was going to have all the living doctors sign it.
Well, that'd be cool.
That would be cool, but I gave it to Paul first, and that was a big mistake. I gave him the bottom. I said, Paul, I just want you to sign this. And I said, can you just sign it large enough so that the other doctors can sign it? He heard that, and he signed it as huge as he could possibly be. And I go, Paul, why'd you do that? I said, I want the other doctors to sign. He goes, no. That's my TARDIS. They can sign the other side, but that side is my side. And I laughed so hard and said, you know what? I guess you'll be the only doctor who signs this. So I lacquered it up so it wouldn't get faded. But also in the meantime, Eric Roberts was there. And I said, you know, it'd be cool if I could get the TARDIS and you two fighting over it. Just sitting there fighting between each other. He goes, oh, I could do that. Yeah, that's a brilliant idea. Now, Eric is Eric, and he's there for the fans and such as well, but I knew he wasn't going to own up to it so easily. But Paul convinced him. Eric walks up, all right. And so he walks up on one side, Paul goes on the other, and they start playing tug of war with it, and it is another one of those pictures that I is surreal. It's just a blessing to have, and just, you know, makes it all worthwhile having to done this and be a part of something wonderful, being part of the legend, and that Paul and Eric are both part of the legend now.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's really cool. Have you gotten all the living doctors
pictures? No. Okay. In fact, I'm hoping, we were invited by Fan Expo to go to Dallas last year, mm-hmm. and Capaldi was there, but they had us working too, and the line for Capaldi was 2 hours, and I could not wait in line and then be in time for our panel. So literally I had to see Peter from afar, and I missed my opportunity. So now this year he's at SuperCon, and I said, I'm not missing this opportunity.
and where's SuperCon at this year?
The Fort Lauderdale Convention Center.
Oh, nice.
The end of July.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
So, coming. Since we've talked about, you know, the Doctor, and what did you think of his two companions?
I think I was just geeking out because it was the first Asian companion that I can think of with Yiji Cho.
Yes.
And now I had somebody I could relate to. being predominantly Asian myself, I'm part Filipino, so I was like, oh, and we got an Asian companion now. But that didn't last too long, and nor did Grace Holloway. I think she was a great spar for him. Mm-hmm. Because she was more – he's more passive, setback. He still does the right things at the right time, and he says his thing – you know, he says things like triggering the fire alarm and saying – she's going, why did you do that? And goes liven things up. You know, those kind of quirky things. But I think they sparred off each other well. I wish Yiji had the opportunity to spend more time with the Doctor as well. I wish they were the next two companions. It would have worked for me where I saw Yiji as more of kind of the Adric. I don't want to take him that route, but he was more of he's fascinated by what's going on, but he is embraced by whatever he thinks is wonderful to him. And when he's influenced by the Master, be it that his brain was, you know, a little, you know, he was, you know, hypnotized a bit there. But I see EG could have potentially been a very strong character with Daphne or Dr. Grace Holloway.
Nice.
That they could have sparred off well with McGann's doctor, and they could have worked together if they'd gone on to different planets, or they've gone on to this industrial society that's gone bad, like a Blade Runner type deal or something like that. I would have loved to see more episodes with them. Unfortunately, Big Finish couldn't get whatever deal that was with the company of the Vancouver, whoever filmed it for Fox there. They just, for whatever reason, couldn't get the companion names to use. So they were kind of, that was the end of it. That was the end run for it. So.
Because didn't he also appear? Yiji also appear. It has another character on Big Finish.
Yes, they both have been different characters on Big Finish, but not their respective characters from the TV movie. In fact, one of the BBC licensed audios was something called Real Time, and that's actually taking place with the Sixth Doctor, and Yiji's playing Dr. Goddard, which is a very pivotal character in that episode. And it's one of the most wonderful episodes I can think of, which is the best and the scariest of Doctor Who.
Oh, wow.
But yeah. If you get a chance, I think that it might be on YouTube. It's a bit lengthy, but it's worth it. It's the Sixth Doctor and his companion, Evelyn Smith. And it's an older companion, which doesn't fall into tradition, because we always have the younger, more skimpier clothing companions, and here's somebody who actually plays off the Sixth Doctor pretty well, makes him a challenge, as opposed to here's Mel, who's supposed to be a computer wizard, and we never use it. You know, at least if you're going to give him a hobby or an occupation, make it part of something. They finally use it in the Seventh Doctor, in one of his Big Finish audios, but I was just like, she's a computer wizard, but somehow or another, she's also an aerobics instructor to him. So I'm like, okay.
You're like,
I guess that's weird. How the door swings.
So speaking of the movie plot line and everything, when you first look at it, because I'll read the description of it, it's following the Master's trial and execution at the hands of the Daleks. The Doctor, currently in his seventh incarnation, is transporting the Master's remains to Gallifrey via his TARDIS. En route, the box with the remains breaks open and ooze leaks out, infecting the TARDIS. The Doctor is forced to make an emergency landing in San Francisco, Chinatown, on December 30th, 1999. Now, what did you first think of that, of this story altogether?
How?
Well, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'm just not believing that the Daleks would let the Doctor take somebody's remains back home. That kind of threw me off. I'm like, the Daleks would have taken his remains and buried it, or just let it blow away or something like that. They executed them. Okay, fine. We'll have to deal with that. And the Master coming back as this Serpent King goo, that just goes around, you know, the ambulance in this weird CGI thing. And I'm just like, I kind of get it, because the Master is a survivalist, and I'm sure he was already one step ahead of the Daleks, knowing that he might be executed. He would have found a way out, and there it is. Whether that's going to be explained or not later on is another story, but I was just like, okay. So, well, I had to learn to accept that as well. There were just certain things about the TV movie I just had to, like, either I accepted it, or I could just gone to a corner and said, you know what, this is not Doctor Who, whatever the hell. And I decided, I'll take it on. You know, it's back. I want to appreciate it. Maybe, hopefully, they'll explain why we've got the Lizard King on as the Master there.
Well, do you think that is maybe one reason why it wasn't as popular in the American TV culture?
I think it was just it didn't. The pilot is good for my generation.
Right.
But for a new generation, it was a cluster. There was too much going on over it. And because there were so many little intricacies and nuances, the Doctor kisses, here comes the Master being executed by Daleks, and we can take him home, you know, put him on a shelf. These things really just – and then you had the changeover regeneration. So for me, I was appreciated that I got to see Seven leave, and he got his send-off. And we got to see a new Doctor, but I could see why people may have been confused for people of a newer generation who was looking on to this for the first time and going, what the hell am I watching?
Who is the Master?
Who's the Doctor? What are we talking about? And I was hoping maybe that, because the companions have always been the device that the audience sees through to see the Doctor and what goes on. We already know about the Doctor from his history, based on the classic series, but for a new generation to see, you know, and be I think they were just as befuddled watching, you see Daphne's face always in confusion. I can just see that every time the new generation audience are looking at it going like, what he just changed, what the heck, he's kissing companions, what's with the Lizard King going through the ambulance, Eric Roberts, why?
And more importantly, where did he get those jelly babies from?
I don't ask. That's
exactly.
You know that scene where Captain Jack is there butt naked and he pulls out a gun towards the robots? Yeah, just don't ask.
Yeah, it's better just to not ask.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe there's an orifice we don't know and we don't want to know.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because so, I always think, now that you mentioned, I was thinking about when he pulled out the probe from his belly.
Oh, yeah. Just like,
okay, where were those jelly babies?
Because thinking of your mind going, when he said, she said, I'm not too hard to find. I have two hearts. And I was just thinking, wow, you know, how many times has he actually really said that to just anybody whatsoever, you know?
I just, I don't know. Like I said, I kind of just accepted it, and to me, that's the new norm for the series. Some of the things in the new series, I'm going like, okay, did you even watch Classic Who to figure out what the hell you're talking about? There's some things that are kind of being rewritten, and they're just kind of accepted as part of, okay, this is it. And yeah, it's kind of hard being, you know, one of the purists going, no. No.
This isn't correct.
No, that's not how the plane flies. It goes this way.
So do you think it would, if you have someone who is brand new to Doctor Who, do you think it would be a good movie to show them?
Well, I think I it's hard to tell because it usually for somebody, I'd have to get to know them to find out what they liked. And then I usually we get this question asked a lot on the Mark Who 42 panels. You know, I have a friend who wants to start Doctor Who. What would you suggest? We actually had a whole panel to it on this past convention at ICCon 3. And I don't know is the answer. I usually figure out what do you like because somebody may love Blink.
Yeah.
But if you really think about it, Blink is Doctor Who light. So if I was trying to explain to somebody why you should like Doctor Who and I show them an episode of Blink, I'll show them everything about the characters, the stories and everything else, but rarely any Doctor. My favorite to put in the what I've called the box, so the starter kit box of Doctor Who, my favorite is called Vincent and the Doctor because I think it's the best of all. It has the historical. It has the adventure. It has part of the mythos and how everything works. It has the time travel. And for the newer generation, which is what I'm calling the Whedonverse now, it has the emotional attachment. So everybody gets something out of that episode. And I think it was just brilliantly done. I think that's one of the best of Doctor Who. Having to answer your question, I don't know. I would. Apparently people had seen the TV movie and that's where they started. And they're still watching it since.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to answer that. I personally would not. That's something I would go to and say, hey, by the way, if you want to see the Eighth Doctor, let's go there, because his tenure as far as audio, as far as visuals concerned, is very minute. We have The Enemy Within, we have The Night of the Doctor, and that's it.
That's true. And when I introduced someone to the Third Doctor, their first response was, "What is this? The Ministry of Silly Walks?" So
pretty much.
and so I actually did not watch the 1996 movie until just a couple years back. And so my first, incarnation of seeing the Eighth Doctor was the Night of the Doctor, of course. And then I went back and started looking at all the Big Finish stories, of course. And then I finally was able to procure it because it is a very hard DVD to find. And I think it was supposed to come out on Blu-ray.
I think correctly. It is. No, it should be out on Blu-ray. I haven't followed up as of yet. I actually, I think I still have the old VHS somewhere. That's why. That's why I haven't even bought the movie. I was just like, well, I still have a VHS player, which is now going into. And if anybody who's grown up with VHS, there's a certain lifespan of a VHS before it goes, I'm going to eat your tape. Tell me I'm wrong about that. At some point, the VHS goes, I'm hungry. After 20 years, I'm just going to eat tapes now.
Yep, absolutely.
And there's nothing you can do about it. So, okay, fine. Start eating tapes. So, yes,
go for it. That was one of the stories. So listening to Storm Warning, it actually helped me understand a little bit. But I had that knowledge, like who the Master was, who, like all the little references that we see in the movie that – I was able to help deduce a little bit more, but someone going first into it, I don't know.
I think you're on the right track. I think I wouldn't start them off with the TV movie. I would start them off in Big Finish.
Yeah.
I'd buy them an audio of either one of the one-off episodes, which means that there's no story arc or, it's just the one story. And then I would bring them back and say, by the way, this is where it all started, but be prepared. It's going to be a little weird. It is kind of, as far as the Doctor Who mythos, it kind of reinvents it, but it's, if you like the Eighth Doctor, then this is where it all started. This is where it began. I think I would do the same thing with what Russell T. Davis did with the New Crew. I'm going to start you in the middle of the Ninth Doctor and then bring you back so you can see how it happened. And then you'll have a better appreciation when you know about regeneration, you actually see it for yourself for the first time.
I got to admit, I would love to see more of the Ninth Doctor on Big Finish. Just throwing that out there.
They've started it, and unfortunately, it's not with Eccleston. Yeah. I was hoping Chris would have at least rethought it and just said, listen, I don't know how the BBC treated you, but I know they'll treat you good at Big Finish. And I know Nick Briggs does the voice of Eccleston. And I, not to criticize, because I haven't heard the whole episode, I just heard the trailer so far, and it doesn't sound like Eccleston. It sounds more like a spoof of the Ninth Doctor. Mm. And it sounds more cheerier than what Hal Eccleston played. Remember, he's war torn doctor. He's got
PTSD.
Yeah, PTSD. He's got PTSD, war doctor.
Right.
And he's, I mean, you were there at the witness, you hit a button and the universe just basically, you know, your world just was destroyed. And this time warrior you fought in really just rattled the universe across space and time. And you are the victor. But you don't get any rewards.
That's true.
Yeah. It's kind of like playing, what was it? Pitfall. You keep playing. Eventually the time runs out and going like, oh, why?
Where am I going? Why do I keep swinging these vines?
Exactly. Sorry, guys. Pitfall is from Atari. Google it. Look it up. YouTube it. You'll understand why.
And you'll love it.
You'll love it. Exactly.
All right.
Oh, by the way, that gator, that middle gator, yeah. SOB. SOB.
Oh, he yeah. Cheats. Absolutely.
You make that one jump, and then all of a sudden goes, open up. And you're like, I'm like, you.
Oh, I love that.
It's not
that
the first awesome. And the third gator. It's always the second gator.
Yep. Every time. And then it started moving its mouth quicker and quicker. And oh,
exactly.
Yeah. Every time. So, Kristen, what's your final thoughts on the Doctor Who retrospective?
As far as the TV movie?
As far as the TV movie. I mean, would you think that the movie and then The Night of the Doctor is a perfectly nice wrap bow or no?
It's
because it is the beginning and the end.
Yeah, it is what it is. We got our beginning and the end. And I hate to say that that's what we've got, but that's what we've got. And we've got tons of Big Finish to listen to. As far as my interpretation of Paul McGann, I think he's one of the best, if not – he's really up there in my top three. Mm-hmm. And he – I just wish there was more of him. And the reason why he's in my top three is thanks to Big Finish, because it was just those two episodes. He probably fall down there just because of quantity. I didn't have enough of him. So it was hard to pass judgment. But now with Big Finish, he's kind of he flops around between my top three and five. Paul McGann is such a wonderful man himself. If you ever have the chance to meet him, even if you're not a Doctor Who fan, you should just go up and say hi. And just because he's done other work too. He was in the Disney Three Musketeers. For a short amount of time, he was in Aliens 3.
Yeah.
So he's. I have not seen it, but I know Mark has seen it. Mark Who 42, a Horatio Hornblower. I mean, these guys are. He's just wonderful. In fact, I don't know when this is coming out, but our next two episodes coming up is a 2-part series after we've done the series review of Doctor Who of Series 10. Daphne Ashbrook is our guest.
Oh,
so
very cool.
We'll be back in our series as well, if you want to check that out. But, Mark's calling.
I take it my favorite is my first doctor will always be Tom Baker, because that's who I saw it on PBS.
Yeah, that's number one for me.
And my favorite doctor, however, is the Eighth Doctor, just because of Big Finish. And I have to thank Big Finish big time for having such a great sale. And I was able to buy so many different audio stories with that. But yeah, I like I said, I think it's a good story. If you start with Big Finish and actually see how he regenerates into the Eighth Doctor and how he regenerates into the War Doctor. And I think I think overall it's a really good story. And I really think a film commentary would be a good one to follow up with this one. So, but yeah. I want to say thank you for joining us on this retrospective, Kristen.
No, and thank you for inviting me. This is awesome, man.
I appreciate it. I mean, it's always good to have someone who is a Whovian who has such a wealth of knowledge to share with us. So, but
good to know that my hours of Doctor Who watching actually outweigh my hours in college.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, what am I going to use this for again?
I work in sales, but, you know, my Doctor Who hours, you know, now I work on a radio show. Hey, go figure. Hey,
we can make this work, right?
Exactly.
Well, again, thank you so much for being a part of this. And thank you for joining us here on the Phantom Podcast Network.